And welcome to the Dice and Screaming Podcast. Well, we're taking a safari today, right? Sounds like the natives are restless. All right. So, hey, I'm Randy.
And I'm Mike. And welcome to the little gaming podcast that was sentenced to death by Snoo Snoo.
What? All right. Well, all right. So we...
I sprung that on him with no warning.
Yeah, that was a cold read. So yeah, despite the cringy start, welcome. And today we're going to be talking about some news from around the gamosphere, which is Chaosium. Chaosium has just released a new supplement. Arkham, as it stands, has been released, unleashed on an unsuspecting world, and the leatherettes have sold out, and they went to that fast, as well as
warm leatherette.
Okay,
sorry, I just got to get my vintage.
All right, I do protest a bit. Is there any reference I can make using any English language that you cannot turn into an obscure reference that I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about?
Oh man, I will play that song for you after this show.
All right.
Those of you who get it.
You got it.
Yeah, good for you.
But again, you're taking me in cold. So.
And it is a beautiful looking book, if I may say so. The $75 retailing leather-bound edition of Arkham for Call of Cthulhu is, wow, is it attractive. Yeah, it is that wonderful etched... with, you know, a very attractive font in keeping with their tradition. You know, there's nothing about this that makes it look like, oh, they're going totally off brand with this. No, they're not. It is gorgeous. I am so impressed. And $75 is a steep price point, and I will ding anything for that. However, this is not the only version that is available. So...
Right, they have a hardback, but they've sold through the leatherettes, and so this is a good time to take a look at where this come from. This is Arkham, which is updated from the 1990s. Arkham Unveiled. It was by Keith Herbert, Mark Morrison, and Richard Watts, although Keith Herbert gets the top billing on the cover. It was about 160 pages softback back in the day. It was really one of the perennial crown jewels of the Call of Cthulhu game. I think it was a third or fourth edition, I'm pretty sure, that it came out for, presumably. But, of course, it's Call of Cthulhu, so you can use any edition with it. It's nearly ageless, including today. But back then, this was a particular sandbox setting. So we're going to take a look into that. So we'll just tear right in. So we're going to be talking about Arkham Unveiled, where it come from, and Arkham Now, which is a hardback, and of course the leatherette sold through is a big topic.
It is available on PDF. Okay, it is out there at a lower price. I want to specify that because I'm not a big fan of the concept of variant covers that are more expensive. I feel like that is just one of those things that like intrinsically damaged the comic book market. But you know, that it was a boon for comic shop owners. In the case of game stores, you know, there's not a lot to be gained from variant covers of RPGs. But I'm kind of okay with it as long as the other option is there. Like the lower cost option should always be present. And it is. So,
like, yeah, whatever, they have a normal hardback.
Whatever ding I may give for this, like, please don't take it as overall disapproval. Because the product with that higher price tag is gorgeous, and I totally see why that is the version that sold out, which again tells you also about the desirability of the product in this era right now, this economic zone for gamers, to accomplish that level of sales, like a complete, you know, physical run sold out, that's actually pretty rare. That doesn't happen every day. So congrats, Chaosium. You obviously got it right.
And also the fact that it sold out so well tells you that the aficionados of the Call of Cthulhu game, some of the older crowd, the old guard, as well as some of the new blood coming in, revere this product. It was heavily talked of. It'd been anticipated, like, when are you going to reprint an Arkham? We need to reprint an Arkham. The PDF had been selling well in the Miskatonic repository that Gaussium circles.
But there hasn't been a new edition of this Arkham material ever.
Updated and given a better treatment of artwork. Not that, you know, it needed that, because inside, essentially, most of it's just for the Keeper. The GM in Call of Cthulhu. So the Keeper, it's mostly a Keeper book.
Yeah, this... Oh, man. I mean, it's a gigantic collection of, how do I put this? It's like they, sort of like a Johnny Appleseed of the imagination. Like it just, you know, strides across the landscape planting seeds that, you know, the DM or Keeper can grow at will. What they choose, when they choose, where they choose in the areas surrounding Arkham. Now, it seems by description as though it's very localized. And I will admit, that is not entirely incorrect. It is, you know, Arkham and environs.
Right.
But the richness that they have managed to pull off in such a comparatively narrow area is amazing to behold. And I think that is why this book has the perennial popularity that it has. The value to a DM is amazing.
Right, and we haven't had a chance to look over the new Arkham, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be coming in the near future. Anyway, talking about Arkham Unveiled back in the day, this has kind of two parts to it, with a third part. And the first part is pretty much just detailing the environs of Arkham, Massachusetts itself. And of course, it's got things like, obviously, Miskatonic University figures very heavily in here.
Yeah.
And also, but other things like of the time, Prohibition, if you're playing in that, speakeasies are there. There's a small group of rowdies and organized criminals and smugglers in one area of the docks running with the union teamsters and all that, which you would expect. So there has a lot going on here besides just housing Arkham University and Dr. Armitage and his group of world-weary investigators that you may find yourself in.
Yeah, the point is that it doesn't merely offer, like, here are a series of hideous encounters with horrible creatures and or people in cults, and then just, like, quit there. Okay. You know, roll up the carpet and lock the doors behind us. We're done. No. It is a remarkably well fleshed out environment with a great deal of material that can both be used as separate adventures in their own right that are not necessarily, you know, harrowing encounters with extraplanar beings, but rather situational issues that can be tied into existing adventures or just used as red herrings while the players are
exactly.
They're looking for their answers over here, and this happens to not lead them to where they want, but while they're barking up the wrong tree, this is what they run into. And in a mystery environment, which very much Call of Cthulhu is the classic mystery environment, beloved to this day for exactly that. The intersection of mystery and horror makes it a perennial hit. So, wow, does Arkham Unveiled deliver that?
Oh, yeah. literally, if you needed to know, like, the Tapactionist or somebody who had knowledge of fly fishing was in town, you had your NPCs for that. It was also well organized and presented, so it was very quick and easy to look through. In addition, there's characters in there that do have some mythos knowledge, like even just a quick stopover at the boarding house. There is a NPC who is currently suffering from trauma induced by his encounters with the mythos. So there's a chance to learn mythos lore in just a passing encounter with a very haunted looking NPC that may make the players suspect him at first, like you said, in those red herrings that you can solve this with.
Yeah. I mean,
and then you
the guy, the guy who looks nervous and keeps to himself and like his hand shakes when he's pouring a cup of tea, yeah, I mean, you might paint this as a creepy vibe and have the players thinking, you know, what is he so upset about? And then it turns out, like, you know, this person has a piece of information that may be extremely useful, and the only thing they're holding back is that they're, the only thing holding them back from sharing it is that they don't trust it. You know, like, their trust level is really low.
Yeah, right, they're shaking.
They're evil people who are doing terrible things.
So
they summoned it on purpose.
No, no. So, you know, normally what you'd expect out of Arkham is, apparently since this is ground zero of all the mythos activity occurring in the world where a lot of people come, obviously almost everybody should be known, know something about the mythos. And that's just not true. And this presents a more grounded version of the 20s and one that more, say, pulpy or aspect oriented, where, you know, people are wary that things aren't like they used to be. The nights are darker and longer and stranger. And more dreams are haunted by intrusion. Yeah, you can do that. And it'll, and this is the versatility of the setting, is you can, you know, present it however you want as the keeper. But nominally, this is grounded more in the historical 1920s, with all that implies, as well as moving past some of the problematic issues and just addressing that people just don't really believe that there's a giant sea monster out there ready to rise up at any moment.
Oh, of course not. You know, poppycock.
Well, of course, what nonsense. But nonetheless, one of the intriguing things is, like, the stonecutter who does the tombstones knows about activity of the ghouls. He's seen things, but again, doesn't know who to talk to. So again, just like, how many characters seek out a stonecutter? But a good keeper can plant seeds, especially if you play in the Arkham area for long enough, that these things can come in, as well as a normal haunting. Well, I say normal, it's not mythos related. It doesn't involve, you know, a dark young of Shub-Niggurath lurking in a cabin somewhere.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have to go directly to that. It doesn't have to go from 0 to 60.
Okay,
like, yeah, you know, you're not testing a sports car here. Like, it's not how fast can I launch right into the tough stuff. The point of a slow simmer, or like a nice little rolling boil, is to let things reach a feverish pitch before all heck breaks loose.
Heck.
Yeah. And I have, as a player, found it extremely satisfying. You know, not just as a DM, you know, like it does seem like as a DM there's some art and craft and guile to it, and it's very satisfying to see that look on other people's faces. But I always enjoyed it when the build was slow. Like the clues, you know, were hard won. And then you are inevitably drawn into the web. Like, you move towards the conclusion, and the conclusion is that much more satisfying because it wasn't just, boom, the monster explodes onto the street and it's, yep, like pulling people in half. You might as see. That was the fun I had in Deadlands, where there were like no F's given, and like it got
no flips given. Yep.
Yeah, it got explodey really quick. You know, it's just gunfight in the street. Mega Rattlers. Yeah, that's a different style of play, and I love that one too. But Arkham unveiled, for its time period, it was almost like overkill. There was so much harvestable material, so much.
Yeah, and if you needed to know what the cost of a ticket at the rail station was, well, you're in luck. If you wanted to know, like, what times the trains are leaving, well, hey, you could roll a dice and figure it out. And that was the big thing. Like you said, there's so much detail in here, along with just the normative detail, that it lulls you as a keeper into, like, oh, this is just a sleepy little town.
Oh, no.
But then we go to Miskatonic University, which later was, it supplanted this, overshadowed this supplement, as Miskatonic University really did need its own book. Oh, but you got a lot of detail out of this. You got the curriculums, the various heads of the departments, the dean of admissions and all that, what tuition rates were for attending Miskatonic University. Go Pods!
the Miskatonic cephalopods.
Yes, go Pods. Yeah, the little flyer. This also contained a little newspaper, the Arkham Gazette. And so you could see some salts from there. And, of course, you would hand this anomaly out, like, you know, you pass the newspaper, this is what's on there. Which brings to the second.
Man bites dog twice.
Exactly. Which brings us to the second part here, that besides some seemingly normal NPCs and other settings, this also contained the Miskatonic University. It also had kind of the presumption that you might start a campaign here as playing students, as well as just have your investigators stumble in here wanting to look at the Miskatonic repository of their collection of old and arcane tomes, which has been carefully and lovingly assembled over the years. Some of them taken from collections inherited from European universities that no longer wanted to deal with these books. You know, bibliophiles, and you definitely get that. Yeah, there's a couple musty bookshop dealers in Arkham, so you would not be disappointed going to Arkham. This is where you would want to go in looking for antique and rare tomes of occult and arcane lore.
Yes, particularly because in Call of Cthulhu proper, it's quite unusual for anybody starting a game to know more than one or two spells. You know, like that represents
anybody,
remarkable knowledge of the arcane. And literally assembling more than that is... the work of a career.
Yeah, and the 20s was rife in the actual historical background of the rise of occultism.
Oh, very much so.
Many people were intrigued, so this does kind of coincide with that. But that's a topic for another time. Back onto the review of the Arkham Unveiled. There is sort of a idea that you would start with students enrolled, and that's how you would start playing. And, of course, going to classes and trying to keep your grades up seems quite fun up until they come with the next part, which is the adventures. And they come four adventures here, and one of my favorite is A Little Knowledge. And a medical student has found Dr. West's notes that were confiscated after Dr. Halsey went missing, and then a particular person is still in the Arkham Asylum, banging its head against the walls and howling. It looks a lot like the good Dr. Halsey. Anyway, yeah, so this Little Knowledge starts you off, and yeah, it's somebody trying to use it's Reanimator Light. It's not fully out there, fleshed out as a, like, hey, you know, you're going to be facing a whole horde of reanimated undead. No, more like body parts, but yeah, an anatomy class gone wild is the best way to explain that one. But it is a fun adventure. I know a lot of people have different opinions about the Reanimator. The Stuart Gordon movie is, of course, a different kettle of fish altogether. It's almost a comedy at certain points, despite its grotesque aspects. But and Jeremy Combs is excellent as a villain. But if you move past that and actually read the real story, it's a lot darker, but also a little. It's a short read. The next one is The Hills Rise Wild, and this is basically a hunt for a fallen meteorite, because that could never go wrong in Call of Cthulhu, right? That's just, you know.
Yeah, this is so much more wholesome and scientific and, in you know, nice and ingenuous. Oh, boy. There's no way anything corrosively corrupt or horrifying.
Yeah, this would never go wrong in any. This would never take a dark turn suddenly going across into the wilds. And this is the
low 80s movie, The Curse.
So this is where we enter into Lovecraft country. And despite the homage to its name in literature, this is what they call it, Lovecraft country, county.
Yeah.
They give the homage there. But The Hills Rise Wild is, somebody once said that using the outdoor survival from Avalon Hill would be the perfect way. You know, that you know, exploring each hex. And I think that's pretty good because most of the animals you're going to, you know, you're not going to be attacked by wild bears. There is no wandering dark young of Shub-Niggurath waiting for you outside.
The king in yellow does not await you as soon as you step off the porch.
Yeah.
That's not how this rules.
However, there are other things in the hills that you must be aware of. And if you know what I'm speaking about, the hills have eyes.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So there's that. And as well as the meteorite itself is an encounter. The next one is The Condemned, which is a revenge tale about an 18th century occultist who was burned at the stake. And now all the witch finders, relatives all through the generations, are now finding themselves being attacked and dead. And so the investigators revenge. Are pulled at this point. Yeah, so you can definitely use that one. It's a pretty straightforward adventure with a little bit of mystery, but it's more looking, it's the, again, before Google, you had to look through the library and records. And so this is a library search skill, which is why Call of Cthulhu ends up, well, I guess we're going to the library to do our research.
Yeah, very, you know, also hauntingly reminiscent to those of us of a certain generation. Reminds us of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because yep. What does everybody do? They hit the books. Like, we don't know what this, you know, creature or situation is, so we're in research mode, and everybody's all reading all night long, drinking coffee or sodas, and you know, until they come up with an answer. So, yeah, welcome to Call of Cthulhu, which long predates that tradition, but it sets... Like, this is the game that sets the tone there, that, you know, when strange things happen, you go into research mode before you take action.
All right. What all these people have in common, all they're related to the Council of Witch Hunters. And, yeah, it turns out that they were right to burn this guy, but he returned.
Yes, that, like, some 250 years ago... you know, this circle of people were responsible for a series of executions. And what do you know? This is what happens when you actually did manage to kill one actual sorcerer.
So that's pretty good. And then the last one, The Dead of Night, pretty much a discovery of a skeleton in a demolished mansion that's been decrepit for a number of years. It's now being demolished, and they find a skeleton. So the investigators are again called in, and... to investigate this. So any one of these can be inserted. You could be a faculty member and students finding the inheritor of Dr. West's horrid legacy of reanimation being attacked by the reanimated parts. Or you could be just a team of researchers.
Let me give them a hand.
A researcher.
Literally.
Indeed. you got to have heart.
Chop off a finger. And give it to someone. Ooh. I want to give you the finger.
Oh, yeah. So The Dead of Night is the last adventure there. And this one is a little bit more specific that you would have to be from Arkham to understand a lot of, or at least have a character or two familiar enough with the things in Arkham and have played here before to really get that one. So that's the weaker of the adventures. It's a standard murder mystery that ends in a ghost, but
it... See? I'm so glad you did it. I actually held off. I was trying not to Scooby-Doo this.
But it's
perfect because, look, Scooby-Doo's the kid version. But, you know, This is of equal or greater value in many
equal
respects.
Equal or of greater value.
Yeah, this is the material that it takes that to the next level.
And this is what it, being a keeper is. This is why so many people, it sold out so fast, I think, is because people wanted the leatherette version because they treasured this. Because the special edition of this one, which is usually, like Mike said, a higher-end collectible, more thing that you're not really going to game with this in one hand, rolling dice and soda and eating Cheetos. This is one that you want to keep on the shelf. And that's because it has a revered presence in people's hearts that played it before, and a lot of the new blood hears the older blood like us speaking about it, and we go, hey,
if you're running a campaign, youngster, if that's how you roll, this is what you want, you know, just It, instead of being old man yelling at clouds, it's our do it. This is totally worth it.
Yeah, if you're going to play some Call of Cthulhu, you need the Arkham Source book. And like, apparently,
$20 I ever spent back in the day. When
yeah, it was well, about 16. It says on the back here, it was $16.95.
Yeah,
back in the day, that's what the price tag says. So I'm just like, wow, okay.
And that was premium material at the time.
That was a discount. It was under there $19.99, $95. But yeah, printed in 1990 when it came out. It was one that I could not play Call of Cthulhu without, because I loved the reference material. I loved the depth of the NPCs and how they were seated so many places, that this was literally the open sandbox campaign for a Call of Cthulhu. Just let the players do what they want in town. You end up in Arkham, maybe you're a researcher or an antiquarian and you're looking for rare books or studying architecture. Look, almost even a private eye can get an investigator, can get involved in there. Like,
I've been contracted to find the missing son of a industrialist a couple of hundred miles from here, and all of my investigations led me to this place.
Yep, you can have it seated that they're looking. They were once in attendance.
He went for a little vacation with his friends at some local estate called Saltburn.
All right. We talked about the secure references. Stop it.
If you know, you know.
I was trying not to go there, but here you are, creeping around the edge of the campfire like a wild beast. All right, enough with you.
But the thing is, you can just use so much. It is so lovingly put together to be the toolkit for keepers, and it was then, and we're pretty sure it remains now.
Yeah, Call of Cthulhu and RuneQuest are in great hands right now. And the community has really helped.
Renaissance.
And yeah, you can talk about a new golden age. But yeah, if you're a Call of Cthulhu player, this might not be the book for you. Check with your keeper first. Mm-hmm. And, we gave some spoilers for the older one. So, yeah, it's kind of too late now. I was going to run down from my group. Now you ruined it. Well, okay, sorry. It was released in the 90s. We thought it was pretty safe. But nonetheless.
Yeah,
We need to get better at spoilers.
35 years does seem like a long time to keep clenched about the spoilers.
Yeah, we should be, but we should be cognizant of that. So yeah, we'll have some spoilers. So if you're going to play this, but yeah, it is definitely one for the ages. If you're a Call of Cthulhu aficionado or just if you're just interested in that period, this is a good source book to get. So, but all right, I think that. We land the plane on that one.
Yeah. Well, after a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank God it wasn't a Boeing plane.
That's gracious.
You know, we still got the doors on. The wings are where they belong. So
wings haven't fallen off.
Yeah.
So yeah, before the tires fall off on this one, we're going to put it in the. We're getting this back in the barn. So just remember, of course, that Facebook group, the Dice is Screaming. We're there. You can join us there. Let us know what you think about our episodes. And if you have any ideas for some upcoming ones, we're going to be doing these nice short and sweet ones, as well as check out for our Facebook page for our Discord nights. So we had the last one was pretty sparse, but then it got a little lively towards the end. So
yeah, now I do want to mention, we've got a very slight format change. We will be doing mega specials. Will be periodic longer episodes when we require them. But, this is the baseline average will be half hour.
Yeah.
And then when we have a really important topic, we're breaking the bank and we're not going to be bound by rules of time or space. We will just, do all that we intend and get as much material in as possible. So feeling pretty good about it.
All right.
Well, look forward to that.
All right, well, I think that'll do it for us. So until next time,
may the dice always roll in your favor.
We're out.
See ya.